Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.
Timothy Maurice, and that's M-A-U-R-I-C-E, not Morris. We are so grateful for you engaging our podcast, Unbranded. For if you're one of our regular listeners, I really appreciate you constantly downloading and engaging the conversation. If you're new, you can expect us to explore the relationship between human and brand behavior. We go behind the scenes to see how brands and people tick, what drives them, what drives concepts, why are concepts, how do they evolve, and what do they mean. Today, we talk the value of an MBA. That's right, a master's in business. Sounds huge and big, but we want to demystify it, and we want to see how can it impact your personal brand. Is it necessary? There's been a lot of critique over the years. I think Donald Trump, interestingly, when The Apprentice came out, there was a lot of sort of like questioning on the relevancy. Is it too much theory? Does it need to be more practical, etc.? So we're going to have a conversation today about the role and the relationship between the two, particularly in the emerging markets in South Africa and Africa. We have a guest today, Eric Wright. He's been living in Africa for over 20 years. He's an entrepreneur in over 30 countries, CEO of Africa Venture Partners. Eric has founded or co-founded many businesses across Africa. He's a former head of private equity at Citigroup South Africa. Eric Wright, welcome to Unbranded.
Thank you, Timothy.
It's really awesome to have you, particularly because, you know, this conversation, I mean, you have an MBA from Wharton, right?
Yes, that's correct.
And Wharton apparently is the first sort of founded in 1881 by a donation from Joseph Wharton, one of the first business schools, I think, MBA programs in America.
Yes, it was the first business school in the world, actually.
Really?
Started in 1881.
Yeah, and then look, after that was 1990. You guys had a 9-year head start. Tuck School of Business was founded at Dartmouth, conferred the first advanced degree in business, specifically a Master of Science in Commerce, the predecessor to the MBA. So it's a really rich conversation, and I'm assuming there would be an Eric Wright without an MBA and an Eric Wright with an MBA. What does the Eric Wright without an MBA look like?
That's a very interesting question. I think the Eric Wright without an MBA would be a lot less strategic, a lot less ambitious, even a lot less confident. I think the MBA degree gives you a set of skills and tools that in itself creates a level of confidence that you can go out, conquer the world using critical thinking and problem-solving skills. And you're very comfortable in environments where there's a lot of ambiguity, but you have that confidence that you'll be able to figure it out.
Got it. There are 19 attributes I want to just sort of skim through quickly. And you tell me if there's anything missing from the list that you think could be added to this. You know, you get an MBA, your sort of academic knowledge, your application of knowledge in the workplace, communication skills, emotional intelligence, entrepreneurial skills, environmental awareness, ethical business conduct, financial management, human resource management, information management, innovation, insight into sound, sustainable development, international perspective, leadership skills, marketing management, operational management, quantitative abilities and skills, and strategic management. Add something to this list.
I think, again, I would add the ability to operate effectively in environments where there's either incomplete or poor information, which is often the case you find yourself in, particularly working in markets such as Africa, where the quality of market research is either non-existent or very poor, particularly on the consumer market side. And I think the MBA training and skill set allows you to go into those markets and try to get primary data points, do research, and test and then iterate. I think it's very important in this environment that you don't try to craft a solution that's perfect, but you test your ideas, and at each incremental point you begin to refine it and revise it, and then go back out into the marketplace. And I think the MBA, particularly some, again, the critical thinking skills allows you and helps you to do that.
Let's go back a bit. Let's go back 30 years ago. Now, when you were finishing your MBA, when you literally were finishing it, did you finished it before you came to Africa?
Yes, that's correct.
And did, when you were finishing, did you imagine yourself ever living on this continent?
No, not at all. And when I went to business school, I thought I would leave. Wharton is known very much for its finance program, that I would work in New York on Wall Street for 4 or 5 years and then head back to California, where I'm originally from. And while at Wharton, which has a very large international student body, I decided to take a year and do something totally off the beaten path. And I moved to Ghana, where I started, co-founded an investment bank. Spent about a year there in 1992-93. And at that point, I started thinking about moving to South Africa. Having been very involved in the Free South Africa movement as a student on campus, I was very familiar with the politics of South Africa, but never thought I would actually live here. And in 93, I started watching the political situation very closely and decided to move and came in 94. And it's been a great ride ever since.
It's interesting because you're, if you think about the role of particularly Ivy League programs and how they helped around with divestment and really sort of break the back of the economy of South Africa and apartheid, the apartheid history and the apartheid financial beast. What that really says to me is that people who are in, usually who do an MBA are quite critical thinking, a group of people. I'm imagining the network you get from an MBA is one of the big benefits.
Yeah, there are really three reasons to get an MBA. One is the education or the learning aspect, and we talked a bit about that in terms of the skill set you acquire. Two is the branding associated with it. It represents certain things to certain people. And then three, specifically to your point here, is the network. And I think over the long haul, the network from an MBA is by far the most valuable. You'll find yourself either hiring people that you went to school with, investing alongside them, or they investing in your business. They may be partners, they may be suppliers to your business. So that network is very critical. And it expands beyond the school you went to, but other MBAs as well that you may meet along the way.
If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting to Eric Wright. He's a founder of Africa Venture Partners, CEO, actually. You're still CEO, right?
Yes.
And he has an MBA from Wharton, which is actually the first sort of business school. Ironically, Trump, we mentioned Trump earlier. He has a degree there. It's not an MBA.
Not an MBA, but he has a undergraduate degree.
And he's very proud of this, and he reminds people
all the time. All the time. And I can't say that all Wharton alumni are proud of him, but
So today we're talking how an MBA can sort of amplify and help with your brand. Eric has founded the MBA Indaba, www.africambaindaba.com. If you want to follow and go to the site and sort of check out what they're doing, we're going to speak a bit more about that in a moment, but you can sort of get sort of acclimatized with what's happening there as we go into that conversation. If you are sitting across and you're looking to hire someone who has a Harvard MBA versus a Wharton MBA, will there be some bias?
Bias in terms of who that I
ultimately you want to hire or engage?
No, there wouldn't be any bias in terms of who I hire. I don't know if my Wharton colleagues would appreciate this this statement, but I think you tend to get different people, and this is a very general statement. Harvard MBAs tend to be more generalist. Wharton MBAs tend to be more specialist, if you will. Both obviously are world-class business schools. And if it came down to a last-minute decision, then yes, I would go with the Wharton MBA.
If all things equal.
All things equal, I would go with Wharton MBA.
Just quickly, I want to know which, you know, you've got a lot of experience. Obviously, putting this together, you must have been able, you've been researching, you've seen a lot, you've heard a lot, and there's a lot of research out there. Which MBA program do you think is the most underrated?
Underrated? That's a very good question. The most underrated MBA program would...
You can give us a few, just so you
know. I'll say maybe, and these are all very good. They may not be top 5 or top 10 internationally. I would say from the U.S. perspective, maybe UCLA or USC.
Okay.
I mentioned those two in part because they both are based in Los Angeles, and Los Angeles is the hub between U.S. Asia business and commerce. Obviously has a very large entertainment industry as well.
Okay.
But really the U.S., China, U.S., Asia nexus is very critical. And if you look at a lot of Asian students are attending both of those schools, and I think over the next 10 to 20 years, they will even rise even higher than where they are. They're both top 20 or top 25. I think they will inch into top 15, maybe top 10 over time because they're strategically well positioned. And it's a lot easier to recruit top students or professors to a California than a Boston, which is very cold
most of
the year,
or
New York, et cetera.
Sure. I looked at
I think there are a number of institutions in South Africa that I think are underrated on a global scale as well. And that would certainly be UCT, Gibbs, Wits, and maybe Stellenbosch.
Got it. You know, I was speaking of those schools, I was looking at sort of the ranking. And, you know, and I was am imagining this is maybe an old ranking, but just kind of give the listeners an idea. UCT was number one, Stellenbosch number two, Wits is number three. I'm not sure. The woman who founded iFix, I know she was a Stellenbosch student. I'm not sure if she did an MBA. But one of the things I find interesting is that the way people sort of navigate to their sort of in-group members, if you are part of a network, and be able to attract funding, to be able to sort of build on. Have you have any critical relationships from your Wharton brothers, sisters, that really help you become who you are?
Oh, absolutely. I would say my first four or five jobs were all, I was hired by Wharton grads.
Oh, wow.
Including
that's significant.
In South Africa at Citibank. It was a Wharton MBA who hired me. So, yes, it's been very, very valuable. In my entrepreneurial endeavors, I've had several Wharton grads or alumni that have invested in businesses that I've started. I've likewise invested in some Wharton MBAs as well. So I think it has paid off tremendously.
Wow.
Over the years, and that network is extremely valuable. And
it's like a bloodline almost.
It's like a bloodline, and there's a saying at Wharton, take the call, which means that if a Wharton person calls you, take that call.
Wow.
And
that's powerful.
It's very powerful.
I looked at some famous people who had MBA, Mitt Romney, Meg Whitman, Shaquille O'Neal. I was shocked when I saw Shaquille O'Neal's name. Phil Knight, founder of Nike. Michael Bloomberg, the current CEO of Pepsi, Indian-born Indira, has an MBA. And, you know, just thinking about the role of an MBA and how it has impacted people's brands, you know, I think that from my perspective, I don't have an MBA, but it's something I've been considering. In fact, I've been chatting to UCT and a number of schools because, you know, a lot of schools like UCT's program, for example, a lot of those schools often struggle to attract people because maybe people want to go to the States with the bigger names because it's quite expensive. So they've been thinking about ambassador programs and getting high profile people to do an MBA and sort of sell and so forth. So I had actually considered it. In someone who's in and around the media space, do you think it's valuable? Do you think I should consider it?
I think the MBA degree across the board is very valuable. You'll look at many schools where there are medical doctors, lawyers, people who've been successful in media or entertainment who go back to get an MBA because it rounds out their business skills. It gives them, I think, better insights into how they can monetize their brand. And it allows them to negotiate better deals with counterparts as well. So certainly, I think people in entertainment or media, it certainly has value for them as well.
Got it. Now, just in terms of, you know, for those who have no idea about an MBA, there are a couple ways you can do it. In fact, you could actually use your work experience in history without having an undergrad degree to get into some programs, but not all.
That's the exception to the rule. There are a lot of schools or a lot of others who do not feel that should be the case. Most think that you should have an undergraduate degree. I would probably lean in that direction as well. to get an MBA, you should go into the program with a very strong experience base or expertise in some discipline or domain. And the MBA should give you a broader look and understanding of business in general. So going into an MBA with no real strong core understanding or expertise in an area and just get an MBA is not that valuable in my perspective. So I think the undergraduate degree is very important. And as you go to the better schools, just the analytical rigor of an MBA, it will be very tough to get through. Many of them have very quantitative classes, so having the math or the science background or the writing skills, it'll be very tough to get through an MBA.
The reason I mention it, I met a woman recently at the Women in Mining at a talk I was giving, and she just received some award. So she never did an undergrad degree, and she was accepted at UCT and then ended up on some advanced program at Harvard. And she says it's the best thing that ever happened to her was to go back to school. So she had all this extraordinary business experience in the mining industry. And she's, you know, a colored woman from Cape Town. If you listen from the States or wherever, you know, that's, you know, South African sort of framing, colored. And she physically says, I will testify in front of anybody that it's the best thing that she's ever. She said she didn't need to necessarily, but, you know, in terms of her career, but she knows that the next chapter is going to be better off because of it. Do you find people who go there reluctantly look up and go, wow?
Go to business school?
No, go to, yeah, do an MBA reluctantly and then find themselves like really grateful they did it.
Yeah, I think it teaches you a lot about yourself as well. So I think that's a very important aspect of it. It opens your eyes to the potential opportunities that may be before you. I never would have ended up in Africa had not going to business school, for instance. It totally changed the career trajectory of my life. So I think the people that you go to business school with is the best area for the education. It's not necessarily the professors. It's what you learn from your fellow students.
Now, there was a bit of a critique that happened. I mean, a lot of the deans at top business schools have acknowledged that the media and public perception of the MBA degree has shifted as a result of the financial crisis. What are your thoughts in terms of the relevance of an MBA after the financial crisis?
I think the relevance is still there. I think some of the issues that people have is that business schools do not teach or do a very good job of teaching ethics. And that's why we ended up with the financial crisis. It wasn't because of the analytical skills that the bankers were had, but it was the ethical decisions that they made. And we've seen that not just in the financial crisis, but with other very large companies, whether it's Volkswagen or Enron, that have made decisions that were not very ethical and have brought down either companies or economies or countries.
Let's shift the focus to the Africa MBA Indaba. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Eric J. Wright. He's the founder, CEO of Africa Venture Partners. He came to Africa just over 20 years ago, and he regards this as one of the best things that's happened to him. He's former head of private equity at the Citigroup South Africa. The Africa MBA Indaba, you can check it out at www.africambaindaba.com. Is there anything like it on the continent?
No, not anything on the continent.
Yeah.
This is the first.
Congratulations for getting this started. I think it's very rewarding. Is this your first one coming up?
Yes, this is the inaugural event, 1st and 2nd of August at the Sandton Convention Center.
Awesome. And what can people expect? I've noticed you've gotten a lot of top schools to sign up globally, some of the best schools in the world to sign up, and a lot of participation from the continent as well. Who should be in the room?
So the individuals that should be in the room, first and foremost, are business school alumni, both MBAs and others who have attended shorter courses at some of the top business schools. So the objective is to get the right people in the room to make really interesting things happen. I'm sure, you know, many people say that innovation occurs when ideas have sex. And we want to get the right people in the room, bounce ideas off of one another, and hopefully as a result of that, over time, new businesses will be formed, investors will identify companies to invest in, and those who are looking for career changes can meet companies at the career fair. So it's primarily a business school alumni event with a smaller portion that is focused on the business schools that are looking to recruit potential MBAs. So many of the top programs from around the world will be participating, from Wharton, Harvard, Stanford, Oxford, INSEAD, Yale, Columbia, IE from Spain, as well as the top schools here, Gibbs, Wits, Stellenbosch, Henley, UCT. There are about 25 schools in all that are participating.
Let's fast forward to 2030. Currently on the continent, you know, the percentage of professionals with an MBA versus 2030, I'm assuming you're hoping that this will be sort of an annual sort of event, conference where people come together and more people will get an MBA and it will contribute to development of this continent and so forth. How would you like to see the growth? Tell me about how many more people you'd like to see have an MBA if we look forward to 2030.
Sure. So we hope to help grow the pool of MBAs and the quality level across Africa. So today, there are no real accurate numbers of how many MBAs are on the continent, because many of them study overseas or through distance learning or online platforms as well. But we hope to try to get to people at a very young age to demonstrate the value of an MBA and to increase the brand equity in the credential itself so that people aspire for an MBA and not only to become a lawyer, a doctor, or a CA. South Africa has a very strong CA culture. And if you look at other markets around the world, they're more of an MBA culture. You mentioned some of the famous MBAs out there. If we look at the large companies around the world today, most of them have MBAs, or certainly the largest credential that represents the largest number of CEOs are MBAs. Companies like Apple and Google and JP Morgan, Credit Suisse, Procter & Gamble, Coca-Cola, all these companies are headed by MBAs, not accountants or other professions. So we want the MBA to be on par, if not to be perceived as a higher credential as a CA, for instance.
Got it. There are a lot of leaders who've also had an MBA. George W. Bush had an MBA. Do you see an MBA? Has there been any African leaders with the MBA?
I'm not aware of any African heads of state with an MBA. But I think it would certainly be the right direction to head, as Africa needs more entrepreneurship. It needs a friendly business environment. So being business savvy, I think, is very important for all politicians and heads of state, even if it's not an MBA, but some business school training and education.
Sure. I mean, I think, you know, moving forward, it would be really cool to see if this, out of this pool that you're able to sort of grow, if emerges an African leader. That would be quite powerful. Just in terms of your partnerships and anything, is there any sort of on the ground at this moment, are there any sort of networks you're hoping to bring in to the space that you haven't been able to sort of reach out to yet?
You know, we've been pretty effective in reaching a lot of the networks that we've been going after. We have some very supportive sponsors, Telcom, Discovery, Microsoft, McKinsey, AMSCO, the IFC have been very, very supportive. And I think as the conference grows, we'll see more and more companies getting behind what we do. One of the things that I often hear as an investor is that there's a lack of talent and managerial expertise. And the business schools and MBAs are prime candidates for those positions. So hopefully we'll see more and more fulfill those roles.
When it comes to Africa, what are some of the shining examples or schools that have made major strides over the last sort of decade? Anything that you want to point out?
So the school that has made the biggest strides by a long shot would be Stanford. Stanford, from what I understand, had 200 or 300 applicants 5 years ago to their program. Now that number is close to 3,000. So they've been very, very aggressive in traveling around the continent and spreading the word about what a Stanford MBA can do. They have certainly at least one great ambassador who's done very well and who's actually started his own business school now. Fred Swanica, who is starting the Africa Leadership University and a school of business, university, and now it has a school of business. So they've been very, very aggressive in their outreach. They have a lot of money for students. They have a fellowship program that pays 100% of the MBA. And the U.S. programs can be quite expensive, so having the resources for a full bursary is quite attractive.
You can study an MBA part-time, full-time. Is there a recommendation, or it just depends on the person's lifestyle?
My recommendation, if you can, is to do it full-time, but that is not always the way most can do it. I say that because if you do it full-time, the personal relationships you develop and the network you develop will be a little richer, and you'll probably be able to leverage it down the road a bit further. But under current economic environments, it's often very tough to do an MBA full-time. So the part-time programs, block release programs, are just as good from a quality of education perspective. And if you are doing it part-time, my recommendation would be to make sure that you get to know as many people as you can and develop the relationships, both with the fellow students and your professors, because those are the people you want to draw upon once you're done.
If I'm listening, and I'm sure there's someone out there listening going, I'm sold. So what do I need to do? How do I go to this website? What can I expect? Do I pay? Is it free? What happens?
So the conference is about 700 rands. For the 2 days of the full conference, the expo where the career fair and the business schools will be participating, that is free. So we hope people will come out for that as well. So it's, 700 rands for 2 days, or just the expo component, which is totally free.
And the expo component is primarily for students who are looking to do an MBA, but for the professionals that are looking to network, they need to be at the conference.
At the conference, or if they're looking for a job, they can go to the career fair, which is free as well.
I see. So there's space at both that you could, if even if you're a student coming to the conference, you're probably going to learn something.
Yes, absolutely. You should be able to learn quite a bit.
Eric Wright, thank you for joining us on Unbranded. We look forward to seeing the Africa MBA Endowment continue to grow and thrive on the continent.
Thank you, Timothy.
Awesome.
I am a South African. I carry the hopes and dreams of my country and the generations to come. I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye, we believe the future of our country will be defined by our actions today, which is why we are committed to the development of our leaders. Sibanye, we are one. Visit us on sibanyegold.co.za.
This is cliffcentral.com.
Hello, it's time for the Cyber Health feature. I'm Rianette Leibovitz. Thank you so much for tuning in today. You know I'm from Safety Net Cyber Safety because we want people to be cyber savvy. We want you to be inundated with information so that you are making the correct decisions and, you know, sailing safely on the cyber highway. So today I'm so excited because for a change I have someone in studio with me, and I'm going to introduce you to her now. And of course, like I said, on the emails and so forth, I'm going to be sharing 10 cyber savvy tips, and this is from Alert Africa. It's a very cool website that I found, and I would like to share some of them with you today. I'm going to share 5 of the 10, and before further ado, let me introduce you to my guest. Her name is Tanya du Plessis, and Tanya is the project director for the Digital Education Show and Training and Development Show Africa. And this is done by Terrapin Company. And I'm so excited because today we are talking about the Digital Education Show Africa 2016. So Tanya, thank you so much for joining me in studio. It's really good to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me here.
No, it's good because, I mean, when I spoke to you and when you shared information with me, I saw that you are passionate about the digital side of things as well. And you mentioned that you were put in charge to launch the Digital Education Show Africa in 2015. And as me, you are passionate about ICT and education and believe that it will assist in building a world-class education system by modernizing public education and improving the standards of performance across the entire system. And that is exciting because I think this industry is busy going through a revolution, and the Digital Show Africa or Education Show Africa is really part of that. So what's the show about and who is it aimed at?
So basically the Digital Education Show, in partnership with our local Department of Basic Education, the collaboration of their ICT and DABA, really we're hosting the event on the 18th and 19th of October at the Sandton Convention Center. The event really looks at supporting, growing and empowering ICT in education, and it looks at all the key challenges, opportunities and trends within the ICT in education system, and looks to bring together all relevant stakeholders in the education ecosystem.
So if you say relevant stakeholders, who does that include for this specific show?
So with regards to the Digital Education Show Africa, we are looking at from all educational institutions, anyone that might be looking to implement or refurbish technology in education within their classrooms, their schools, their methodologies, as well as the key stakeholders that help assist these educational institutions in the challenges they might face, like connectivity, funding, hardware, software, content, teacher training, and as the reason why I'm here, cybersecurity as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear that's on your list, on the agenda. I have to say that I think it must be quite challenging to be an educator or a teacher nowadays, because I'm sure most of them, when they studied, actually didn't learn how to use these interactive whiteboards and iPads to teach and so forth. So it's a very big hurdle for some of the teachers to get over. And besides implementing the technology and the budgets and all that stuff behind the scenes, I think it must be quite tough in the classroom for the teacher to see how to use it and to actually use it to the best of their ability to make the kids find value from it. And what do you think is the relevance for the show in South Africa and in Africa?
Well, look, the Digital Education Show really aims to empower learning through technology. As you mentioned in the beginning, we're very passionate about really furthering education in South Africa, hence our partnership with the Department of Basic Education. And we really just look to grow and push our education system forward through innovations, because it can be done. Sure, there's resistance, but there is also a lot of excitement and benefits to using technology in the classroom.
Definitely. And who have you partnered with? I mean, we all know that a show like this and most things in life happens in partnerships and that you can't do it by yourself. So who are your main partners for this specific one?
So look, as I mentioned, we're targeting all elements of the ICT and education ecosystem. So from a security perspective, we have partnered with a Safety Net Cybersecurity, as well as our Department of Basic Education. We've partnered with SAPA, the South African Principals Association, ISASA, the International Schools Association of South Africa, and then also our sponsors being Via Africa, Extra Marks, Citrix and Arrigo Investments, Snaplify, Google for Education, and I mean there's a whole lot more that you can access on our website as well.
So while we're talking about the website, what is the website?
So you can find more information on the topics, on the exhibitors, on the sponsors, and so on at www.terrapin.com/digitaledafrica.
And Terrapin, you spell?
It's TERRAPIN.
It's those double R's and double N's that we need to remember. I think it's really great that you're doing this and that you are putting such an emphasis on the digital side of education. So thank you for that. And I'm excited to be part of it. Safety Net, yeah, is a definite partner, and we like to be part of these conversations and to push the agenda in terms of cyber safety, but specifically how do teachers actually protect themselves and what do they need to know on how to deal with issues such as pornography in the classroom or even profile that's being hacked, and they are also being bullied. So it's a very important thing. So, Tanya, thank you so much for joining us. All the best with the arrangements. I know it's going to be a huge success. And, let's stay in touch and please share some information online. And then, like I say, all the best.
Thank you very much for having me. And if anybody does need more information on the event, it takes place on the 18th and 19th of October at the Sandton Convention Center. And as I mentioned the website earlier, you can just go find more details there.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Tanya.
Thanks.
So talking about cyber savvy stuff, let me share a couple of tips with you. And I have to say, I found these 10 cybercrime savvy tips on Alert Africa. And I recommend that you go and look at them because there's so much more. I'm just giving you the bullet points. However, there are many other drop downs that you can click to find the actual apps and the actual software and etc. To download and so forth. So let's start with number one on the cybercrime savvy tips list. Number one is use common sense. And before you think, okay, no, I've done this, hear me out. You never share your personal information, such as your ID number or any personal information on unverified websites or via email. No one should ever ask you for that type of information via email. Only engage with people on social media that you actually know. I like just, you know, we all have friends that we've never met, but really share the intimate things with the people that you would actually invite for dinner. Then limit personal information on your public social media accounts and especially your info regarding kids, and review your privacy settings. And then there are a whole lot more, but one that I want to emphasize is do not enable your GPS location tracking on social media, because they don't know need to know where you are all the time, and you don't want people to know where you are all the time. Number two is update your software. Activate automatic updates for all your software, including your operating systems, your antivirus, your Adobe Readers, Flash, etc. It is a good habit, and in this way you will make sure that hackers have a harder time to get into your system. Number three is install antivirus software. So download and install either a commercial or a free antivirus one. One that I've worked with that I really like is Kaspersky Lab Safe Kids. If you have kids, and there's a free version and there is a paid for version. And do not install more than one antivirus software per device. Again, I invite you to go to this website, Alert Africa, to see more about the antivirus software. They've got a whole range of tips there. Number four is inspect links before you click. Now, we've all seen these horrible, some of them funny, and some of them really obscure emails where they ask you all kinds of weird things. But remember that banks will never ask you to send your password or supply other personal information in an email. And if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, and don't click on it. And on this website, they actually have a whole to-do list. For instance, you go to virustotal.com to check out if it is a virus, and then you follow the instructions from there. But the next one, number five that I want to share with you is emails and attachments. Now, this one, they've become really sophisticated. Hackers have actually gone the route of impersonating the MD of the company and sending mails to the other directors, knowing when the MD is traveling, and then sending a mail from that account saying that I need money right now, I'm at the airport, please transfer it. And obviously, because it's from a known source and a trusted source, the money then gets transferred, and only later they realize, oh, it's a scam. So they take months to plan this, so don't be one of those who actually get caught. So in terms of emails and attachments, always be suspicious when opening emails and their attachments. Business email accounts usually have a linked business-related domain. For instance, it's the name of the person or the name of the business.com, and not a Gmail or Yahoo account. Many times you can see it will say apsa@gmail.com or, you know, some kind of bank or institution. Don't click on that. Banks will never send you emails requesting you to send your password via email, and they shouldn't send reset your password links, etc. And then in terms of how to spot fake emails, here are a couple of tips. The from field does not match the sender, the email, where the email is from. So you can easily spot that one. And then obvious spelling and grammar mistakes. Sometimes they are quite clever. They use an E instead, a three instead of an E. And you, because our eyes read so fast, you don't even realize, and then you've been caught. Obvious spelling mistakes. Other signs to look out for if it's an email is it from a different country, like .co.uk or .il, etc.? And do they ask for money, promising rewards? Oh, man, if I have clicked and actually found all the money that I've won in the last couple of years, I definitely would have been somewhere on a beach right now. So be careful for those ones. And then if it implies urgency, your account will be closed today if you don't do X, Y, and Z, then please don't even click it and open it. Then in other terms, if you get your attachments, never open any attachments from unknown senders. Some file formats to look out for includes like .exe or .msj or so forth. Be careful for those. And if you know the sender, ask about the file content before you open them, because many times it could be a virus that actually spreads through your friend's accounts. So be careful for those ones, and rather double check if you're receiving an invoice from a friend that you don't know what it's about. Rather check with them. So in terms of tips, I'm going to share the other six with you, or other five with you, next week. So tune in next week again. It's Women's Day. We're looking forward to Tuesday, 9th of August, 2016. And on the cyber highway, like I always say, be careful, because there are drunk drivers, there are people without licenses. So let's all be responsible digital citizens, make the right decisions, and please engage with us at SafetyNet. It's SavetyNet.com, and find us on Facebook, because we love to hear what you say and we share some great tips and advice. Thank you so much from me, Rianette. Take good care. Bye.
Unbranded on CliffCentral.com.